Every week, fortunate enough to have an author of the week. We keep these archived at ksgf.com. You go to ksgf.com on demand, Nick Reed Show, and you'll find author of the week. It's an opportunity if you're looking for some new book to read, go through, see our past books, and have a listen to the interviews we do with the authors. Wilfred Riley, an associate professor of political science, Kentucky State University, a historically black institution. His research interests include international relations, contemporary American race relations, and this is what I love, the use of modern quantitative empirical methods to test sacred cow theories. And his latest book is Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. But, of course, he's written of them, and we're going to talk about them now. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. And I'd like to start off with what prompted you to write the book, if you would.
Sure, and thanks for having me. I mean, a quick one-line pitch is sacred cows make the best hamburger in relation to what you said about my line of research interest. What really inspired this, I wrote a previous book called Hate Crime Hoax, which looked at some of these crazy, very flamboyant incidents of false hate accusations. So you're talking about Jussie Smollett, Covington Catholic. I mean, just in the past year, Erica Thomas, the senator who claimed she was racially assaulted in a grocery store. The guy responsible turned out to be a left-leaning Cuban-American dude. The dreadlock cutting case in D.C., so on down the line. So I look at some of those and a bunch of earlier cases. And one of the things I mentioned in the book, almost in passing, this wasn't a very partisan book, is that there seems to be this entire narrative that's supporting the idea that the USA in 2020 is still an extremely racist place, is a very hard place to get successful or make a living. You hear a lot of class rhetoric. And that this has given a large amount of power to the idea of victimization, that if you claim to be a victim, you automatically sort of get the right to speak, to the extent that as an ordinary middle-class citizen, you often no longer feel that you have. So this book, Taboo, takes apart the narrative that underlies the first book. And I just look at kind of all the things you're not supposed to say at a dinner party, whether the major claims of the left and, for that matter, the hard right are accurate. So, I mean, you know, taboo, obvious fact number one, this is chapter one, the police aren't murdering black people. Taboo, obvious fact number two, there is no race war. There's not a lot of interracial crime in either direction. And by the way, Barbecue Becky didn't do anything wrong. Taboo, obvious fact number six, anybody can be racist. And just so on down the line, I look at white privilege, quote unquote. I look at cultural appropriation. I look at some of the equally crazy things the quote-unquote alt-right says the USA should break up into ethnic countries. And so the entire book is designed to take down some of the things you hear a lot in public that you're not supposed to talk about and that are wrong.
Well, and not only are you not supposed to talk about them, but you are automatically the perpetrator or part of the problem if you do. And one of them I know, it has to do with race. And you mentioned it, that this idea that police are going around murdering black people, particularly young black men. And during the last presidential election, I know that was a big talking point amongst Hillary Clinton and others, that it is a systemic problem we have in this country. And any time there would be some shooting of that effect, that would be used to illustrate that this is a common thing that happens in America. And of course, this is part of what you write on, that's not accurate.
Well, yeah, that's chapter one of the book, where I look at the Black Lives Matter movement. I think this is a movement that was begun by most of its activists with the best of intentions, but it turns out that almost every major thing Black Lives Matter said was wrong. Black Lives Matter got a lot of young brothers killed, in fact. And I remember the exact lines you're referring to from President Obama or from Hillary Clinton. I mean, Barack Obama at one point said, if I had a son, he would look just like Trayvon Martin. And when you think about it, that's massively unlikely. The idea that Barack Obama's son would have been rocking the hoodie, walking around, getting into brawls at 2 a.m. I don't think that's the case, but that had a lot of influence nationally. In chapter one of the book, I look at the things Black Lives Matter said, like the claim in writing that thousands or tens of thousands of young, unarmed black men are killed every year by cops. And it turns out that's just nonsense. And it's amazing the media didn't vet that earlier. I mean, the total number of people killed by police, which you can find at www.killedbypolice.net or The Guardian's Accounted Project, is about 1,000 per year. The groups most likely to be killed by police are poor whites and recent Latino immigrants. So the total number of African Americans killed by cops in a typical year is about 250 to 300. It's not even very disproportionate, especially if you adjust for crime rates. And by the way, the total number of unarmed African American men killed specifically by white police officers in the year I look at for some in-depth sort of factor analysis, it was 17. So none of that really turned out to be true. And the way in which the Black Lives Matter story was presented was essentially intentionally misleading, in my opinion, on the part of the media. So that, as I described, in the situation where 70% of the victims of police shooting, victims isn't even the appropriate word, but were working class white guys, what the media essentially did was focus only on those cases involving a black victim. So you took a pool that was wildly diverse. It looked like the pool of young, poor men, and you isolated only the black guys, and you kept running these misleading headlines like another one, you know, hashtag right. Living While Black. So I break that down in detail.
Our author, Wilfred Riley, the book Taboo, 10 Facts That You Can't Talk About. The wage gap, this is another one. And I recall during the Obama administration, I think it was when Jay Carney was the press secretary, and he was asked about a report someone had done that showed that there was a wage gap between genders within the Obama administration itself. And Jay Carney explained, he's like, well, there are mitigating factors in there that have something to do with other than gender. And I thought, well, isn't that nice for them to acknowledge that, but not for everybody else?
Yeah, not if you're a small businessman.
Right.
Exact same thing. So some of the things, you know, which group is more privileged, does affirmative action outweigh racism, you can at least have a debate about. The wage gap just doesn't exist. I come from a business background. I worked in trading floors and so on for years. And you have to ask, if women were paid 70% as much as men for the same work, or blacks were paid 82% as much as whites for the same work, why would any savvy business owner ever hire anybody but black women unless they were an actual hardcore racist? I mean, you'd immediately gain that 30-point, you know, labor cost gap over anyone you're competing against. So, I mean, this isn't taken to full chapter length, but I talk about it. The wage gap between men and women completely disappears if you adjust for, one, whether the women are working at all. Many women prefer to be housewives. So not acknowledging that is just completely dishonest. But two, whether you're working in the same career. Women are less likely for a variety of reasons to go into high-paying but potentially dangerous jobs, lumberjacking, the military, just being a garbage man, even if you look at that name there, that title. And then three, how many hours you work. And the same thing is true, by the way, for gaps between ethnic groups. So, I mean, the average black man makes about 85% of what the average white man makes. But that gap closes to virtually zero if you adjust for just three things: age, region, we as African Americans are more likely to live in the South, and either education or test score on something like the SAT just goes away. So if you take a black guy and a white guy who both went to the University of Michigan, got a B average, and they're both 27, those guys are going to do very, very similarly. One will face a little bit of racism, but also get some affirmative action benefits. They'll get basically the same job. So and this is actually a big theme throughout the book, kind of last line here. But if you don't adjust for what we call control variables, things other than race or sex that vary between the big racial and sexual groups, it's very easy to get this misleading idea of racial warfare or prejudice. So, I mean, just simple one. The average white man is 58. The average black man is 27. That's what you call a modal average. Those are the most common ages. That's not an exact median. But still, like, if you're saying African-Americans commit more crime or whites have more money, it's just wildly dishonest not to point out that the white guy, on average, is 30 years older than the black dude.
So finally, with our author of the week, Wilfred Riley, the book Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About, you hear stories all the time in this country about a person who might make an argument like you've written about in your book, and they get fired from their job because there is this massive digital lynch mob that is demanding that individual get fired, and then the company just, you know, bows to it. So how is it that you have written this book and not fallen victim to that sort of mob?
Well, we've got tenure in academia. You can't fire us. There's some upsides to that and some downsides to that.
So do you get... go ahead.
Oh, no. To some extent, that's a joke. But also, I mean, to some extent, it's not.
Right.
And there obviously is some significant downside to the prevalence of academic tenure. But, I mean, I think 2 points. One, I have tenure, but two, I also live in a sane, you know, heartland, although I dislike the term region of America. So I think it's important to realize, I recently read a good piece, and I talked about it with another host who had an in-depth conversation with Kirby Wilbur. The left-wing elite in the USA is much more concentrated than the right-wing elite. So I would describe myself as kind of center-right, regular guy, used to be in business. And I live in the downtown of the Kentucky State Capitol, which is a city of maybe 100,000 people. The school I teach at is traditionally black, traditionally kind of upper middle class, southern. It's pretty conservative. If I wrote a best-selling, you know, again, slightly right of center book, no one in my administration cares. No one objects to that as far as I've been able to tell. So I think that where you get the kind of screaming mob throwing rocks at the embassy, according to the piece we were discussing, is one of about eight cities, L.A., Seattle, Portland, maybe Chicago, D.C., especially the Georgetown area, so on. So I haven't really encountered that a lot. Like, living in a normal place where I'm a reasonably popular guy, people aren't going to come up to you on the basketball court or the golf course and, you know, start protesting. Right. It doesn't happen.
Our author of the week, sponsored by, Wilfred Riley, the book Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. And that, like all our past Author of the Week books, of course, can be found at ABC Books on North Glenstone. If you know, you go back in the archives and you find one, maybe they don't necessarily have at that point, they'll track that or any other books down for you. So again, thank you to Wilfred Riley, that book, Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. I'm Nick Reed.